You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with no one. Everything has changed. We're all alone. Those damn UFOs. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the Cordelia Hoomst of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad. Look how they massacred my boy! A.k.a. the Gilbert to Morgan Sullivan, a.k.a. Daddy, even if no one can remember that, a.k.a. Captain Forehead, puppet version, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad. On what grounds must he get more law put in his head? A.k.a. the Sullivan to LaToya's Gilbert, a.k.a. Daddy, a.k.a. William Bloody, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
She finally acquiesced to Daddy, guys. This is momentous. And this week, we're watching Angel Season 5, Episode 14, Smile Time, written and directed by Ben Edlund, with story by Ben Edlund and Joss Whedon. It aired on the WB on February 18th, 2004.
And this is the one where an evil children's puppet show is preying on the kids of Los Angeles and stealing their life force. But what happens when Angel himself is turned into a puppet while he's on the case?
Previously on Angel. Nina? 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 There was no previously, but I had to make my own.
Perfect.
We will be getting into this episode, but first, we must introduce our very special guest. He is the co-showrunner of a little show called Lucifer. Heard of it? Mr. Joe Henderson! Yay!
Yay! Hello! Hey. Hi.
Joe, obviously we brought you onto this episode because you know a thing or two about puppet episodes. Famously, there was a puppet episode of Lucifer in season 3. So I must ask you first, explain the Sinnerman arc.
Oh, yeah. So if you actually look at the arc as a sort of isosceles triangle, you really start to understand the shape of it. You really understand this, the pattern, because we were really going for I have no idea.
You heard it here first. He has no idea.
You know what? That was Ildi's idea, so you should have her on, and she can explain it all.
next episode, Ildi's like, no, that was all Joe's idea. You did write that puppet episode, so.
Oh, I did. I came up with the puppet episode. I was, I wanted to do puppets, and I don't know if I knew at the time, but I'm pretty sure this episode had a part in me wanting to do that. I don't want to get ahead of the story. So.
Oh, no.
Well, speaking of the story, you must tell us, what is your relationship to the series Angel and Angel Season 5?
I mean, listen, I started Buffy Season 2, like, in the good stuff, and then, like, devoured Season 1 for better or worse, and then jumped on Angel, and that was ride or die in Angel. I loved it for all of its wonderful highs and terrifyingly sad lows. And I was also a huge Joss Whedon fan in the before times, and now a very, very sad person who still loves a lot of the work, but is horrified by the man. Is that a safe way of putting it? I think.
Very fair.
Yeah, fair. I think. Yeah, yeah. He sucks. But season 5. I don't know. I enjoy for its highs and understand the lows, but also I respect the swing. I actually like Spike being on the show. I liked Gunn being able to play a new angle. I like the idea that they had to try to take on Wolf from Heart and Art from Within. I think it obviously lended itself to a number of wobbly episodes, but also it lended itself to a number of really, really cool, weird episodes, and it gave it a cool, fun engine. Like, I feel like Angel always redefined itself season to season. Like, they would, like, traditionally blow up whatever base of operations they had, and I think that was a cool way to keep the show fresh, keep the audience guessing, and, you know, keep themselves on their toes.
Yeah.
Good answer.
That is a really good answer.
I'm ready for this, guys. I actually prepared.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't.
Oh, to be clear, I did not at all. So.
Okay, good.
Oh, for once, actually, I didn't finish taking notes, and that's never happened before. It's not a criticism on the episode. It was just crunch for time. I spent so much time after picketing just laying down. That's what I do now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't know when this is coming out, but WGA Strong. Support your Writers Guild. Fair deal. Get us fair pay. If anyone wants to join us on the strike lines, we're out there. Please support your local Writers Guild and any future guilds that may or may not strike in the future. Union Strong.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Solidarity. Was there a particular reason you chose Smile Time other than your past with puppet episodes?
I chose it for him.
Yep.
Cute.
Yeah. LaToya is like, you're doing Smile Time. And I'm like, yeah, obviously. You know me that well.
Yeah, basically. All right. So first thoughts on the episode. Morgan, you go.
Okay, this episode is obviously a huge fan favorite. Given my not super lovely and charitable take on this season of Angel, was worried that I was not going to have a good time, and I had a good time. It is so cute. The puppet's little hands. That's my whole review. The puppet's little hands.
The moment that felt hand came out from under the boxes, I had the hugest smile on my face.
Yes, I was beaming. He's a cutie. It's fun to make the big grumpy man a tiny little puppet. I agree. There's so much fun in this episode to be had, and so much delight. I wish there was more time with the ensemble again, but
it's not as bad as Why We Fight. It's not as bad as Why We Fight.
It is not. And even Lorne got like a fun little scene, which was kind of shocking given what it's been like lately. But I really adored it. I was so glad to have fun. What about you, LaToya? Well, yeah. How'd you feel about this one?
Well, yeah, watching it, I'm like, wow, Puppet Angel is chewy. He's a little grumpy gentleman.
Oh,
he is. It's from even the eyebrows, I'm like, that's Chewy.
perfect.
I do want to note that, okay, so Teenage LaToya was not scared of this episode. I did find it unnerving, not because of Angel as a puppet, but those naughty puppets, especially in that first scene, that's some dirty shit. Got me fucked up with that little pale kid and then like, touch it, touch it. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Don't care for that. But
yeah, I didn't love it.
This episode was paired with the episode Obsession from Smallville, which introduced Clark's girlfriend I'm always talking about. So I was eating good that night on the WB. And it was great because the way they introduced her was in a did Smallville steal it way. They were riffing on Swim Fan. And this was a week after their awful Fast and Furious riff. So I'm like,
yes,
the two of them are so hot together. I'm going to ignore all of her flaws. And then they brought her back the next season and redeemed her and killed her horribly. So,
woof. Well, steal from the best.
Yes. And the OC episode that was up against is The Heartbreak, which is the introduction of Teresa, his love from Chino, who we saw in the episode of Angel Damage. That's that episode. And it's also the episode where Seth and Summer have sex for the first time and the multiple first times.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Okay, so much iconic television is happening on this very night.
And just to be clear, I was watching the WB lineup live, and then I had to, like, LimeWire/Kazaa my OC.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for being transparent with us.
Yeah, because obviously the OC took priority in the summer because there was nothing else on, but, like, during the fall, mm-hmm. I had to watch my Smallville and Angel.
Absolutely. I respect that. Well, should we kind of just, like, dive right in? We got a lot to cover.
I do have some negative things to say. And I think it is partially from, like, the beginning of the episode prior to the puppet stuff. And I don't even know if it's negative, but it's more, like, providing clarity for the criticism of the season, kind of. And parts of it are in this episode. Because we were talking, you know, about the highs of the season and the lows. And, like, I get people love the season and they have deep nostalgia for it. Again, I watched this live. But I'm like, I'm not going to pretend I don't see the flaws, especially compared to what the show's kind of done prior. And like I said, I prioritized it over the OC season one. So, you know, this is still, like, my favorite show of all time, people. Come on. Calm down. Yeah. It's just because I was thinking, I'm like, I still couldn't, I take offense to, like, the people who were saying that it seems like we were just, like, watching this and looking for flaws to prove a point. It's just, because I'd argue that people are saying there are no flaws to the season because of that nostalgia. And it actually, the pushback reminds me of when I did, like, the special Race in the Buffyverse episode with Ira and Alana. And there was, like, one person who, like, replied to, like, us promoting it was like, nah, I really don't want to listen to people shit talk my favorite shows for an hour and a half. And, like, that wasn't what we were doing. We were just, like, talking about our love for these shows, but acknowledging how they could have done better. Like, does anyone think Kendra's death in season two of Buffy was, like, good? Is that the hill you're gonna die on? It's just,
mean, I think if you love something, you should be able to criticize it, right? Like, if you love something, like, I think saying something is negative or calling something out that you think could have been better or didn't enjoy about something you love doesn't mean you love it less. It means you're holding it to the high standard that the highs of the show are at and that you care about, right?
Yeah, it's like, so as, like, a TV critic, I'm very much opposed to critiquing a show for, like, for not being what you want it to be as opposed to, like, what it's attempting to be. Like, so where we are intentionally criticizing the show for what it attempted to be, like, as this network reaction to season four, and then what it ended up being because of the unintentional final season. And then at the same time as TV writers, we're, like, we're including our own alts to, like, what this could be because we know what the show is when it's better. Like, in season three, before you came on as my co-host, like, the episode for That Old Gang of Mine when I was doing it with Mac, like, we spent a whole episode, like, realizing what the intent of it was, how it was kind of obscured by, like, the way the direction went. And, like, we were suggesting, like, good alternatives. And, like, we just did that in Why We Fight, too. Like, ways it could have worked better. I love this show. And I am proving a point that I'm right, as always. But
if I may go against my interests and actually back you up, LaToya, I mean, the reason we met is because you were reviewing Lucifer. And well, I think one of the reasons I reached out to you way back when or vice versa was I just loved your reviews because you both loved the show clearly, but you had thoughts and you had criticisms and they were valid. And sometimes I agreed with them. Sometimes I didn't, but, like, I knew they were valid and I knew that they were well thought out. And, like, I feel like fandom should always be willing to criticize as long as there's not a mean-spirited edge behind it. And by the way, they can still do that too. I'm not saying they can't do that, but like what I
mean, yeah,
is when
we talk about Eve on this show, but that's allowed.
All I know is I just love it when like people look at your show and they dig into it. And sometimes digging into it means really feeling the depth. And sometimes digging into it means having issues or bumps or confusion points that they want to voice. And you know what? That's great. That means that you're speaking to people. That means you're engaging. So I say, you know, have at it.
All right. Yes. You heard it here first, folks.
Yes, you've heard it from Joe Henderson, the new showrunner of Buffy and Angel. We're getting Joss out of here. Joe's in charge now.
Don't tell anyone.
Oh, shit.
Beep. Hollywood secrets.
But yeah, I also just wanted to note that there's one episode description for this where it says, like, it ends with, and Wes and Fred's relationship heats up. And I mean, like, yeah, if it was in, like, the refrigerator, like it was before, anything is heating it up. Taking it out is heating it up. Like, she literally saw him in a literal different light in You're Welcome. Mm-hmm. There was nothing in Why We Fight, because there was nothing for the ensemble in Why We Fight. And now this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, cool, they finally got together, but there was no actual groundwork, unlike Gunn and Fred in the third season. And we'll talk more about this in a moment.
I would like to talk about that, but shall we dive in?
Joe is loving this.
Oh,
hell yes. Okay. We open. A little boy is homesick. He's watching a puppet show on TV.
Little Dean Winchester from Supernatural.
Really?
Yeah.
Cute. We're talking, you know, Muppety ass little puppet guys.
Muppety ass bitches.
Limbs and articulation.
I didn't put Elmo in his spot.
Term.
Hold on.
Oh, you got it, please.
Elmo has to come home. Elmo fell and died again. That's why.
That's okay. Now I can see him a little bit and I feel better.
Okay.
So this little boy is watching his puppet show. He's homesick. His mom is like buzzing around trying to find childcare, trying to like figure out what to do with her sick kid.
Yeah.
She does not realize what's going on.
It's amazing because she's like, I have my shift in half an hour. She works at a diner clearly. And it's like, she's talking to her mom. So when she's like about to leave, she's like, Grammy will be here in a couple of hours. So like she's going to work, but her latchkey kid has to just wait for hours.
Yeah.
So, like, your grandma clearly does not live in LA. So. She clearly does not live in LA and is, like, coming from somewhere.
Look, hey, I've had TV as a babysitter plenty of times, and it's never gone like this for me.
Because it's smile time. I do remember the smile time jams being jams.
There are a lot of bops. I do really enjoy the music that's going on here. But what happens is our lead Smile Time puppet, whose name is Polo, who has like a backwards baseball cap, so you know he's chill. I really enjoy the Rocket Power kind of aesthetic of all of them.
I was like, he looks like a My Buddy doll.
Mm-hmm.
Probably eventually.
And he...
Yeah.
Probably. He begins talking right to this kid and is like, kid, come close, like touch the screen.
I don't like
and it. He, yeah, I don't like
it. The kid should have been like, I don't touch the stuff.
He should not have touched the stuff, but unfortunately this kid touches the stuff and he touches the screen and the life gets sucked out of him. His lips are blue. It's not looking good. Mom turns around and sees her kid on the ground, eyes open but unseeing, a frozen smile on his face. Oh no.
And it's like he got jokerified like Batman 89 and then that bitch Knox brought up. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
It's cool when you bring up
it's
comics,
cool when I say it because I'm not gonna mansplain comics even though there have been four hit movies. Like, shut the fuck up. It's a fucking Joker. Really, shut up.
I really wish that final shot in the teaser had stayed on the wide because that was genuinely creepy. And
yes.
I feel like they probably got the note from the network of like getting closer. Because even though it's obviously a disturbing sight, it's less disturbing. Because like in the wide, like I was like, oh, that's that's actually kind of grotesque.
Yes, the tiny little child body on the ground. Yes, it's very horrifying.
Go on that. That was
that
hit me. But
and that's why you're the showrunner now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I sympathize because I can read the network note between the lines.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm sure it was like, get in on the smile because smile time.
We should bring you back for the next Goddard Into Night episode so you can explain what the fuck's happening there.
I don't know what that means.
Gosh,
so, sure.
Morgan, explain what that means.
Unfortunately, Drew Goddard and Steve DeKnight, who I love deeply separately, have collabed on 3 episodes this season, 2 of which we've already covered, and they've both been absolute stinkers. It has been heartbreaking. It is 2 great tastes that are not appearing to taste great together.
Well, I'm a fan of both of those, so I will respectively pass. And yep. By the way, I'm a huge Ben Edlund nerd, and so I was super excited about this, and boy, did he kill it. So,
oh my gosh, a lot of classic Ben Edlund shit.
Oh my God, yeah.
We go to titles, we come back, we're in Fred's lab. Fred is being given some files on 11 kids who've been hospitalized for exactly what happened to this little boy, and none of them have woken up since.
From Knox wearing the most hideous goddamn shirt. Just disgusting.
Knox is, you know, being a creep. Fred thinks that this whole thing is mystical due to the creepy smiles. And then Knox takes up the creepiness another notch in mentioning the Joker, which I wrote in my notes. To be fair to Ben Edlund and Joss Whedon, they have no idea that a man mentioning the Joker to you is like the biggest 2023 red flag there is. But run, Fred, run.
Then he says, from the comic books. Shut the fuck up.
I know about that. But then he gives her a Valentine's Day card in like March.
It's like a few days later, because remember, the V-Day episode was the D-Day episode.
You're absolutely correct. And he goes, well, I didn't take the discount on the card, so it's a real mess.
Okay, so ready for my next rant?
Can't wait.
So she says, we talked about this, to which I write in all caps, off screen. And then I go insane, because this is after she confirmed in Harm's way that there is something there. And then after like life in the party, where again, success, something could happen. But apparently they talked about this. He's like, we could talk about it again. Shut the fuck up. She's clearly not interested. Mm-hmm. And so here we go. And this is my problem with the episode until we get Puppet Angel, and then there are no problems at all. So first of all, this episode returns Nina. This is episode 14 of the season. She first appeared in episode 3 of the season. She was last mentioned in episode 3 of the season. I checked. There were no mentions of Nina at all in between these episodes. And like at the end of 3, it was like, maybe there was a connection. Again, zero mention of this character. And like, this would literally not be the case on this show until this season that they would do something like that. Like, or maybe like season 1, but that's season 1. Like, it's just the mandated episodic nature, which is bad to me. Like, because I immediately thought of in season 2 with the beige angel arc. So you have him donating Cordelia's clothes in like Blood Money episode 12. Then Cordelia finds out about that in The Thin Deadline. That's episode 14. And that's also playing off of Gunn and Cordelia's established relationship and his neighborhood. And then you have Angel trying to make up for it in Disharmony 17, where it's when he gives her the new clothes and everything's good. But like, which obviously the clothes aren't important. That's not the thing. It's just like, these are little bits in like a larger arc, because like these characters exist through the arcs. Apparently not though anymore.
It allows you to believe that the characters are like breathing and living and going home and eating meals and like doing all of those kind of things like alive people do. And when we don't like acknowledge the continuity of their experience, like it does just feel like they only exist to boop around and say quips inside the Wolfram and Hart offices, which not that like knocking saying quips in the Wolfram and Hart offices because they're very pretty, but it just like, they just feel completely bloodless this year, which bums me out.
This is why we were so excited about like the return of the blue blood boy, because it like tied like a couple of things together. It's like, oh, like at least someone was living how the show used to be in the supply closet.
Allows me to believe that the past episodes are something other than a fever dream I had.
And it's like,
which is nice.
It's the reason why the Lorne stuff in Life of the Party kind of came out of nowhere, when it's something like it almost looked like it was being set up like early, but like not really. And it's just how we have Fred and Wes now. She's just like, I like him now. And there's like, there was no Fred and Gunn at all this season, which is wild.
Yeah. Joe, any thoughts on Wes and Fred, the romantic pairing? Because it's something that's become a little bit polarizing. Like, we're a little more Fred Gunn stands, but if two pretty people are kissing, I'm usually happy.
No, Fred and Gunn were much more interesting. Like, I love Wesley as a character, but Wesley is always better playing against type. And Wesley and Fred is quite possibly the most boring combination you can possibly create. And like, but also I get why you eventually want to bring those two characters together, because they should be together. They're just not dramatically interesting. Like, whereas Gunn and her have a much different dynamic and can play a lot more. So like, I definitely, though having said that, I do like where this story goes in this one, because it's very cute and I like cute things. Mm-hmm.
Joe, would you say you're a member of the Gunn Squad?
Oh, I am a card-carrying member of the Gunn Squad. I think I formed the Gunn Squad and handed it to you. I don't know if you knew that. Did you not know that?
Hit the jingle.
It's good to know.
Hit the goddamn jingle.
I'm ready, yeah.
Isn't it great?
It is great.
It's so good.
I love Gunn. He's awesome.
Yes.
He rules.
When properly depicted.
Yes.
You mean holding a basketball in Wolfman Hart?
The basketball, you guys, the basketball was very painful for me.
No comment.
Our next scene takes place in the Wolfman Hart lobby. Nina arrives. She's here to stay in the cells for her full moon.
As she always does.
Apparently.
She had an angel developed rapport off screen.
Yeah, Nina, you know, like, is, you know, Harmony's going to guide Nina to her suite, aka her cage. And Angel's like, no, I got it, because he wants to talk to her pretty girl, which, fair enough.
Nina has not told her blonde sister Jill she's a werewolf yet. She just keeps saying she's camping in the desert.
Nina? Listen, we all go to Joshua Tree every now and then, guys. It's very normal. So
she goes once a fucking month.
Yeah, I have friends that do that, so.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Nina says she's starting to worry I've turned into some new agey moon worshiping Wicca person. And I'm like, probably because you still haven't gotten a job, you hippie.
Hey, we get confirmation she's an art school student in this episode.
Yeah, now it's like, okay, so it's not just classes. She is an art school student. Still no goddamn job.
Absolutely not. Who is supporting the young blonde niece? We get so Harmony has her little moment, and then we get a Harmony and Gunn scene. Gunn checks in on these papers that he filed. Turns out he filed the wrong papers. The law is continuing to kind of leave his mind.
Yay!
I don't know this golf playing yuppie. Give me back my friend. she's like, oh, were you trying to be tricky? And he's like, yeah, I was trying to be tricky by filing the wrong papers, and leaves. I've done that too, so I can relate. Then we go to a scene in what I have called in my notes Nina's cage.
Oh, Nina, wow, clever.
She's like, I'm starting to like coming here, you know? I look forward to seeing you all month. And he just like doesn't take up that signal. He's like, cool, so you want me to run away from you and hide like a little baby? She asks him what he's doing for breakfast, and he replies, you know, drinking blood.
Yes.
I also have no game, but come on, man.
Yeah, I don't remember.
No, this is
him
great.
Being
I love him
so bad. On the show. And by the way, I mean, on Buffy, he was like the cool guy. So I was watching it. I was like, oh, wow. I guess at some point they regressed Angel being just like.
Except
that
for that time he tripped walking into a room.
The best gag. One of the best Buffy gags is like, you have the moment where like Angel's silhouette is about to appear in the doorway, and you can even see his shadow moving in a little bit, and he just like eats shit and trips.
I do not remember that. Incredible. That's amazing.
Like, you know, that's the moment you know that David Boreanaz can be number one on the call sheet on his own show.
He's good.
Here's the thing. Him saying, so oh, you know, drinking blood. I read my notes hot.
All right. I see you. our next scene is in Wes's office. Little Angel and Wes scene. Angel's telling Wes about how that went.
Yeah, I'm like, it's wild it took half a season for Angel to look like Angel again. I'm like, he's looking good here.
He is looking good. Wes teaches Angel about signals. He teaches him that
the iron is hot.
visibly into him and has been trying to show it to him for months. He says,
no, I would have noticed.
This isn't just for me. This comes from people who know. This comes from the ladies.
This comes from the ladies?
The ladies who are Fred and Harmony and the girls in transcription, because of course there are no other women in a position of power here.
But also
no other women I see.
My favorite all those part, I was like, dude. Oh, cool. Cool.
Women where they belong.
Gossips.
Yes.
Period.
Gossiping and quietly typing, just like I like them.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't like Anita, but I honestly would have loved to see more of her, just to like imagine like actually caring about this character. Like, famously, mm-hmm. I hated Justine, but I cared enough mm-hmm. about that character to have a billion bits about her and have written a song parody about her. So
I care Joe, about Justine more than yeah. people will ever know.
You should go back and listen so you can hear my artwork, which is the Justine Jolene song parody.
Send me every link.
It's quite good. We will. I do want to say I like Nina more in this episode.
Oh, yeah. She's good in this episode once he becomes a puppet.
Yeah,
like, she's
charming.
Kind of like fitting into the pocket a little more in this episode, probably because she's not just like taking her top off in the corner of a room and going like, I'm a werewolf. Like, there's like a little bit more to it.
I'm so happy Edlyn stopped her from taking her top off.
I like relaxed once that was cut off. I felt like I had like a flashback to it.
Was there like a lot of, I don't remember the early episodes. There's a lot of.
Well, the one episode.
Her one early episode is a lot of like, I'm taking off my clothes and now I'm becoming a wolf.
I'm
like,
sexily sleeping after becoming a wolf.
Wolf.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of unnecessary horniness, which like, I mean, I love horniness on TV and I think it should be there all the time, but this felt like a little.
I'm pretty sure Seth Green did the exact same thing every time as Oz.
Yes.
So.
Look, they should have given me that. Yes.
They should have given us all that. Let's be honest.
That would have been a gift for us all. So Angel says, oh, God, the ladies are right. And he starts panicking because a pretty girl likes him.
He says, I have no rights.
He says, I don't have time for this. I don't deserve it. And he talks about how with one moment of perfect happiness, we all know what will happen.
Yeah, and then I get a little upset because I'm like, hey, you know, we want to talk about Cordelia at least for like 1 second. Would that be cool or nice?
not to the people making the show, unfortunately.
What if like Edlyn tried to put in a Cordelia mention and Joss is like, but yeah,
it did seem just like you were not allowed to say the C word.
The dreaded C word. I do think it's funny the show is like, LOL, no chance of you being in love with this chick.
Yes.
As much as I hate that the show denied me Angel and Cordy fucking for real, at least they know like he would have lost his soul.
I think he'll be just fine with Nina. And Angel's like, he doesn't see himself as the kind of guy who can date. He's not. I loved that he described himself as not emotionally useful.
That seems like a nicer way of what like Cordelia would say about him.
I actually think that's like very accurate. Wes yells at him to get over it. And he gives a little speech clearly fueled by his unrequited love for Fred about how like if a girl likes you and you like her too, you gotta go for it, man. Some of us are in the friend zone.
Some
here.
Of us have never gone for it. And that's why we're in the friend zone.
Oh, that's what that speech meant. Thank you.
I'll help you with the really subtle things in the script. And Fred herself then pops in, of course, right? Yeah. She's being mentioned. And she tells them about the kids.
Yeah, there's a lot of classic Angel pop-ins and transitions in this episode I appreciated.
I respected it very much.
Yeah, it's nice. I love a pop-in. Angel looks at the files. Like, she's like, I can't find any similarities between the files. This is a huge pet peeve of mine. She's like, I can't find any, like, similarities between the files. And she gives them to Angel, and Angel goes, oh, here's a similarity, like, immediately. And I'm like, so is Fred just, like, bad at her job? Like,
Listen, you
they were watching
the
TV.
Call sheet, the insightful moment. I respect it. Not an easy decision to make, but you know,
they never have to give Angel the insightful moment. Come on,
they just did it. They just did.
They absolutely just did. So all of the kids collapse between 7 and 7:30, which is the time slot we will later learn that Smile Time is on during. And Angel runs out of the room to follow up on this lead because avoidance.
Yeah. And then Wes is like, yeah, Angel's being dense about Nina. And Wes is being dense about Fred, to which I put in my notes, put gun on.
Yes, Fred kind of makes this like it took him long enough comment, and like she's looking at him and she's trying, and I guess not to be negative again, but what changed here? Like, you know,
she saw him literally in a new light, literally in a new light. Remember, it was red, and you're welcome. It was red light.
Joe, this is literally what happened. They did just shine a red light on him, and then Amy Acker went. And, like, that was it. And that was all that we were given to be like, she's starting to warm up to him. And then they kiss in this episode.
Because they say nothing in the last episode because they're bound and gagged.
I mean, listen, we all have our shorthands.
Yeah. That's fair. I'm a hopeless romantic. I love to ship. I love to build up to two characters finally doing a big smooch. And there is no, like... oh my God, I like him moment. How am I supposed to root for this if I'm not being given any of the good romantic beats to dig into?
Why are we
it
not
me out.
Returning to her friendship with Harmony and having her like talk it through there? Why are we not having
to get more Harmony in this episode?
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
You know what?
There could never be enough Harmony.
If Why We Fight was a different episode completely and we could touch on these things.
It really would. So the scene ends with Fred dropping like a major hint, being like, my car's in the shop. And he's like I've got it.
Gunn should have like fucked her on Wesley's desk after that. Because like, if you're not going to do this, I swear to God. But also, absolutely. We learn here that Fred lives in fucking Venice. Because he's like 5'11 Windward Circle. I'm like, Fred lives in Venice? I'm going to puke. She's going to go hang out with Jess Mariano, the piece of shit.
Oh my God. None of the geography in the show has ever made a goddamn lick of sense. Cordy in Silver Lake? Absolutely not. That's a West Side girl, and I know it in my bones.
There's no way Fred lives in fucking Venice.
Yeah, I would put Fred in Silver Lake or... Los Feliz, or practically in the valley if she was feeling very...
Yeah, I'm going to say no-ho improbable. For Fred.
Yeah, I was going to say no-ho, too. Yeah.
disgusting.
Whatever. Poor Wes, just like face plants here. Then in Angel's office, we have an Angel and Lauren scene. Lauren can also confirm that Nina likes you, Angel. And we have a rough joke here.
Yes,
given the
your favorite joke of the episode.
Because Angel is talking about, like, they're talking about how this is someone from TV, and Lauren goes, I know most of the showrunners in town, and none of them are really up to this big league sort of sinister. I'm sorry to say this to a showrunner.
Fine. You're fine, please.
In with the showrunner in the
please
room.
Please continue.
But no showrunner could ever do evil. They're lovable dweebs, mean jocks who must be taken down. Yeah, see, I'm hyping you up.
Yeah, no, I think there might have been some self-awareness that just almost got through and then just didn't quite get there at the end. Who's to say?
Yeah, not quite. Yeah. And then Lauren kind of realizes, oh, wait, that would be funny. I mean, like in a terrible way, that Smile Time is on then. So we go to the Smile Time production offices. Angel encounters a janitor that is like walking around in a daze and cannot like see or sense anything that's happening around him. I loved the production offices and the way it's dressed, like looks like every office I've ever been in and ever worked in. All the memorabilia everywhere, all the puppet stuff. Our camera starts to tilt and we get some like Dutchy angles as we start to realize something doesn't feel quite right here. Angel follows the bad vibe to a cabinet, which turns out to be a secret door. Mm-hmm. He goes through a scary tunnel.
Don't open, dead inside.
Absolutely. He approaches a door that has a sign on it that simply says, don't.
I wouldn't, but Angel's built different.
Yes, none of us are angel. I would not do this.
Actually, no, Joe, would you do it? Would you go to the don't room?
Would you go in the don't room?
To the don't room? I'm a white male. Yes, that's what we do. But I probably would. We're idiots. So
fair enough. It is You're true white brave. Nonsense. That's why Angel did. Not because he's a white, champion. It's because it's white nonsense.
Exactly. It.
I've watched too many horror movies so I'm immune to this particular white nonsense. But other
Jones.
White nonsense, I fall prey to quite a bit.
I would, assuming I got that far, I would immediately turn around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. LaToya, I don't think we would have even gotten you in the building.
Oh, so all these bad things are happening when they watch this show, huh? I'm not going there.
Yeah. No. That's how they get you. So in the don't room, there's some dude in a tank top with a towel over his head sitting under a huge metal sphere. Great vibes, right? He rasps that Angel shouldn't be here, and then the sphere opens and zaps Angel, and he's knocked into a bunch of cardboard boxes like he's on an episode of Charmed. Screaming, I'm yelling. And then, as we discussed, out of the cardboard emerges a lone little felt hand. I write in my notes in all caps, he is Puppet.
Amazing.
I'm so happy.
The best.
So happy.
The way the hands move, like, being a puppeteer is such a, like, cool thing that is so high level in terms of skills. I could never do it. But the articulation in the hands, like, I just couldn't get over it. It was stunning to me.
By the way, as someone who has done a puppet episode, hashtag humble brag, I cannot believe the amount of detail and work. I mean, the work amount of prep they must have done this episode to get the amount of articulation, the different variants on it. I mean, it is awesome. I am so impressed.
Yes.
Like, very, very clearly, Ben Edlund was, like, working on this either on the sly or, like, on quiet prep, because it just, I'm stunned.
Yeah. There's so much here. It's so rich, and it just rules.
Like, I love how awesome. The puppet walks like Angel with his, like, hands in his jacket pockets, and he's all sad.
Like, they
when
thought
he
this
does
through...
his Charlie Brown walk.
Yes. Ah, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, this must have been, like, the best week at work ever. Truly. So we cut to Fred's lab. Fred gets a call from Angel, who can confirm the problem is indeed mystical. Over in Angel's office, Fred, Wes, and Gunn poke their heads in. Is there a problem, Angel? You sounded weird on the phone. And of course you gotta do little puppet Angel spinning around in the chair. You have to do it. It's obligatory, and it's great. And he turns around and he's got, this puppet can only frown. It cannot smile. It was not built to smile, and that's correct. It made me scream. Fred goes, Angel, oh my God, you're cute. And that's the whole app.
This is where
Fred,
I go.
I agree.
He's chewy, and he's like, you're fired.
Yes. She touches his hair, and he immediately says, you're fired. That's why it's good that I've never in my life had hiring and firing power. I would be similarly nuts with it if someone tried to touch my hair. Lauren comes in. Angel explains that the Smile Time offices are under the spell.
Yes.
The gang brainstorms.
Very
wrong.
The way he tells the story is very funny, and they're all trying to hold back laughs. Lauren then suggests he has puppet cancer.
Oh. You guys, Angel's very adamant he does not have puppet cancer.
It's a great, that's a tricky joke to land, and they land it.
Mm-hmm. They do land it, because the absurdity of him screaming that is pretty good.
As always, give Boreana as a sitcom. What are we doing?
I'm begging. Angel then goes on to say,
come on, guys, this is a serious situation. I'm a puppet, and there are children's lives at... Hey, it's Smile Time!
I love this beat so much. Like, this is the thing in a nutshell, his physicality here as a puppet, the little puppet step noises as he walks away, his little gasp when he sees that Smile Time's on, like every micro beat of this is designed to make me joyful, and it works.
And Muppet Him can't use a remote, but like regular Angel can't use the remote, so it's even funnier.
He can't hold a sword. He can't use a remote. That's the
Fair enough. Look, if the priorities, puppet Angel not being able to work the remote with his little fingies. Everyone is worried about him. They're like, you seem like excitable, like you're like kind of becoming like a puppet.
Wes explains that, and then Gunn like confirms what he's saying. I'm like, Fred should have been saying that line. I don't like it. I don't like it when Gunn's not Gunn.
It is weird. Square Gun is very confusing for me.
Well, we will talk more about it when we get into it, but yeah, it's just like, this isn't the line Fred could have said. She already got embarrassed not realizing it was the TV studio. Come on.
Yeah. The gang then watches some Smile Time. I would like to ask you, LaToya, and you, Joe, who is your favorite Smile Time character? Mine is the big purple guy, Horatio Hornblower.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with him.
I do love the Beaker / Grimace riff. I love the one that is definitely budget Rolf from The Muppet Show, who again is also Chewy, but
yeah,
it's like, can they sue?
Also, you took Beaker away. I mean, that's obviously the answer. It's Beaker. Yeah. Like,
no, that's he allowed to be your favorite.
Obviously, like that guy. Also, not to get ahead of myself, but by far the most gruesome death. So,
Also, yes. Budget Rolf is the voice of Frank the Pug from Men in Black.
Oh,
awesome.
Okay, we stand. So the gang is watching Smile Time. Fred orders like a full analysis of the show from the lab. We get a little song about how self-esteem is for everybody,
self-esteem is for everyone.
It is a little bit of a bop.
He's so upset.
He's like, this is war. I want helicopters. I want tear gas. Lorne says
he should have done it
because it's the early aughts. And Angel tells Lorne and Gunn, like, you guys meet with Framkin, the showrunner of Smile Time. Angel is like, can everyone, like, not tell anybody I'm a puppet, pretty please? Everyone agrees. And he takes a silent moment to sigh and brood because he's Angel. But unfortunately, Nina walks in and he jumps under his desk. Another great sight gag.
I love him.
I love him very much. Nina can, like, hear him rustling around under the desk. So she's like, hey, are you hiding from me? And he's like, no, I'm just hanging out under my desk.
Yeah, you dummy.
Like I do.
Like, what's wrong with you?
But he does try to neg her.
This episode, again, I didn't need a reminder, but, like, maybe the show need a reminder. It's like, I love Angel the character. He's my friend.
He is. Yeah. It's Joe. Some of the stuff that we've talked about being something that kind of is hard about the season is that it can occasionally feel like a season of Angel designed for people who don't like Angel. And as big likers of Angel, the series and the character, that can be kind of unpalatable sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, I you can see that in the rebrand. It's like find new viewers, still keep the regular viewers, which, I mean, again, I am amazed how they navigated that impossible target think oftentimes they actually hit it. But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. It's a little tough. Nina is like, she's like, is it weird that I asked you out? Cause like now you won't look at me.
Cause I'm under my desk and I said, got her ass.
Got her ass.
Da-doy.
And he's like, okay, bye. And I write in my notes, I guess being a puppet is inherently vulnerable. So then Spike comes in because he's crashed another car and would like a new one.
Cars into bodies of water.
He loves to do that. He sees Angel and he sees he's a puppet. And I gotta say, Marcers really nails the gleeful
best reaction
joy of screaming, you're
amazing,
a bloody puppet.
Best reaction ever. Followed by the best fight ever, because I love that Angel can still beat the shit out of Spike as a puppet.
Very clearly, there's a conversation where it's like, listen, I'm a puppet, but I still win, right? Okay, good.
Yeah. Very, like, Fast and the Furious. Like, I won't lose my fights kind of a contract.
And also, it's awesome because it's a great character moment of Angel in any form, even puppet form, still wins the fight.
Absolutely. Like, and the physics of it. Like, Marcer's doing a great job, like, selling that Angel's beating the shit out of him. They crash through the doors fighting in the lobby. They've done this many times this season. This one's my favorite.
He calls him, you stupid, limey piece of crap.
Yes. That Spike is laughing the entire fight is so joyful.
Even though
to
he
me.
Is getting his ass whooped and he is bleeding. The puppet does the wire foo. He throws him and he's like,
Angel's very embarrassed. He screams at everyone. Like, Spike is dragged into the elevator by him, and we get like the elevator doors closing and a bunch of like sound effects of them having their little scrap together, comedy gold. They come out. Angel is embarrassed. He does his little Charlie Brown walk after telling everyone to get back to work. But he does now want to roll calls with Harmony. And he's like, and also get Spike a car. Poor guy. He's having a rough day.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
Then at the Smile Time offices, we get special guest star David Fury. I know he was not billed that way, but he's special to me.
Yeah. He is not crediting people.
Mm-hmm. He's working on his puppet. Lauren and Gunn come in. He offers them cocoa because his energy is that he's very wholesome.
And I had to question, like, again, Lauren's not like hiding going out into public. And like, I was hoping maybe there would be an explanation that like Wolfman Heart allows him something, or like there's a glamour, but it's like, no, yeah. David Fury noticed that he was, you know, a little demon man.
Yeah, I feel like he should be wearing like a big gaudy amulet. He only that, like, and it's like, we all know the amulet makes me look like a normal dude, but to you guys, I look like me or whatever. Like, you know, you want something like that because it is bizarre that no one, because like, David Fury notices, but like, it feels like this should be a problem.
He only tried to hide it in the courtroom in the beginning of the season, and we were both like, that's not hiding anything with his hat. He's just.
I bet you they spent like weeks in the room trying to figure it out. And they were like, does anyone really like how much do people care versus he's in the room. This guy's calling him out on it. Let's move on. Yeah. He's a puppet. That's the fun.
It's just been strange because since like season two, he's been always like trying to be incognito when he's out in public. And then he's just not at all now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the inconsistency is weird. Framkin is like, hey, I know the two of you. Like, you are both from Wolfram and Hart. He gives Lorne a very backhanded compliment about succeeding despite his deformities and how it reminds him of the Smile Time song Courage and Pluck, which the lyrics to which are largely Courage and Pluck.
A bop.
Gunn shuts him down, tries to go all lawyer Gunn on his ass, but he doesn't have it. The law's fading.
And Framkin's basically like, your law firm fucking sucks. And I'm like, Team Framkin.
Team Framkin. He's like, you're in for a fight if you accuse me of evil. Like, you're all the bad guys. Who are they going to believe?
Yeah.
Like, you are like me, the nice children's showrunner. Fair enough. Then they leave, and Framkin suddenly slumps over, and the puppet has his hand up him.
Makes you think.
Fun.
I love that
cute.
They added just enough, like, really gross sound effects to make it feel, like, tactile and creepy. And
that's why Morgan likes it.
That's the good shit. I love when this show is gross, or any show is gross and creepy. I need to hear the sounds. I need to be able to hear the textures.
Yes.
It's what's right.
Fucking freaks.
So it's what I like. And then backwards baseball cap puppet Polo makes a call and gets everyone in there. We go to commercial. We come back. Polo has gathered all of the other puppets around the writer's room table. I've seen many conversations like this, but, you know, never quite with puppets. Polo's pouring a little whiskey in his mug and drinking it. He's like, who turned Angel into a puppet? Like, who went rogue and did this? Horatio Hornblower, who's the big purple guy who only speaks in kazoo noises, who I love, explains that Angel broke into the don't room and messed with what they call the nest egg, which is the big metal sphere.
They make it clear, like, it wasn't intentional. He, like, really, it really just kind of was out of their control because he decided to not read the sign.
Yeah, it says don't for a reason, buddy. Polo's like, people shouldn't mess with that thing. He explains, you know, tomorrow's show is a big one. Like, we've been working up to it. We can drain our entire audience's life force. And, you know, the street value of a bunch of children's innocence is like nuts in hell. So they're, you know, doing a big money making scheme, which is very funny to see a bunch of, like, backwards baseball cap, like, daisy vest puppets talking about money making schemes. Like, there's a joy to that. They say after tomorrow's show, they will blow up the studio and they'll run away. David Fury begs for death, but Polo just tortures him by shoving his hand back up him again and making him swallow his tongue. Woof. We then go to Nina's cell. Nina starts taking her top off, but no, Puppet Angel is here. He's staying out of sight, but he does want to apologize. Nina's like, no, it's cool.
Yeah.
Message received. You're busy, important. I'm a sad sack charity case.
Yeah, she's a little weirdo who's like, I'm just Monster Girl. I'm a freak. Like, what is wrong with you?
Like,
be normal for once.
You're a pretty blonde girl. She's a vampire.
She's a pretty blonde girl who doesn't have to work. Like, shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am struggling to feel sorry for her. Angel steps out into the light, lets her see him, you know, once she says all these mean things about herself, because he's like, hey, look at me. I'm no prize. Nina seems surprised, but she takes it in stride. This was the moment where I was like, okay, I like Nina. Like I've talked a lot of shit about Nina on this podcast. I've said her name in a high-pitched voice pretending to be her little blonde niece more times than I can count. But her seeing Puppet Angel and being like, that's weird, but he needs someone right now. And being very kind to him. I was like, now that's like a thing that I want in a potential like love interest for one of our characters that we love. Like it's very kind.
The first thing she asks is if he's okay. It's like, oh, a personality trait.
Yeah, it was really lovely. Angel's like, yeah, I guess I'm okay. Like, it doesn't hurt, but like everything's all fucked up and I'm made of felt. My nose comes off, the little Velcro nose sound. A+. Angel admits he hid because he was embarrassed. Nina's like, why would you care what people think about you? You're like a hero, and I'm just some art school idiot. She tells him the whole vampire thing, it's actually kind of sexy. And
he's never heard that before, like, apparently.
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
He's not listening. He is like, she's like, he's like, I don't feel like that. And she goes, yeah, that's what I like about you. Which, like, yeah, that is what we all like about him. We cut to a close-up on Puppet Angel so he can brood about his feelings and pontificate on romance and everything. And so Nina can, off-camera, turn into a werewolf and then grab him and start mauling him. I write in my notes, Nina turns into a werewolf and starts tearing his ass up and not in the way he'd like.
The fluff is flying. And then I'm like, Nina's chewy. Actually, she's more Dahlia in this. She's a little psycho.
She's just a little vicious.
Just tearing it apart, just shaking her head, tearing it apart.
It's very funny.
It's a great gag.
Even greater is the next moment with Angel holding his cotton guts.
And again, that's like LaToya multiple different puppets they had to build, just on a sheer production perspective. Like, they really...
Oh, yeah.
The easy thing is build one puppet, maybe you can do the vampire face, call it a day, you won. And I love the iterations they went through on it.
Yeah, the swing is, like, incredible. And that they, like, pulled it all off. Like, there's nothing here... I didn't feel myself seeing, like, seams or limitations or things like that. I was just like, this is incredible. He walks out, like... his stomach shredded, holding in his little puppet guts, and he's waddling, and it is just a hilarious sight. Lauren sees him and goes, my little prince.
Again, he is chewy. My little prince.
He scoops him up in his arms and he carries him through the halls yelling, medic, doctor,
what did they do to you
in the house?
When he asks, what did they do to you? Who is they?
Well, he assumes it would have taken, you know, an army to get Angel down.
Even as a puppet?
It's so cute and silly and funny. Our next scene is in a way less fun place than this. We are in Sparrow's workplace. I learned this character's name, Sparrow, the guy who puts stuff in Gunn's brain. Oh. I write in my notes, aka Matrix Room, aka Dollhouse again. The amount of Dollhouse, like, parallels to this also, season.
Didn't I compare
shocking.
It to Nigma's box from Batman Forever? Didn't I compare it to that too?
Thank you. I agree. I write in my notes, this really just is Dollhouse. Sparrow's finishing up work on a guy. He gave x-ray vision. Gunn tells him something's wrong with my implant. Sparrow takes a look and he's like, yeah, it's faded.
He's like,
it's like almost gone.
He's like, Gunn, isn't it? Is that your little name?
Is that your little name? Gunn is so upset. And Sparrow just thinks it's fine. Yeah.
So... because Gunn says, I can't lose this power, these skills. They've changed me, given me meaning. So, you admit they've changed you. Finally, you admit they've changed you.
And we like, did it.
I will say, and I do have in my notes, Morgan, do you want to do the honors? But first, I will say, I think the way Gunn is reacting makes sense in terms of, you know, him thinking he'd be useless in Wolfman Heart, like at the end of season four. But like that, we were also frustrated with that because it was like off the heels of his like his rush hour job with Gwen Raiden. And like she was telling him, don't discount yourself. But he just kept doing it. And then he held a basketball in the premiere. And I just him saying, I don't want to go back to who I was. Again, he's making it change him. But after a season of him dying, I don't. This version of Gunn is like real black man sellout, exceptional Negro bullshit that obviously the show is not trying to look into, but because that's a whole other discussion I don't think I should have with you guys. But
you don't think we're qualified for that?
I have thoughts.
I mean, no, it's very clear. This isn't a very, like, as we've said a million times, this does not feel like a very thoughtful take on Gunn. It doesn't feel like a take written by anyone black. And like,
oh, why is that? Why doesn't it feel like that?
I don't know. Sparrow literally calls Gunn ignorant street muscle.
He calls him a thug.
Which is, yeah, like, what the fuck?
People like it you. Just people sucks. Like you. You people.
Mm. It's just like, it's very shitty. Like, I don't know. I could say a other thing that is carefuler, but it this is such a bummer. It sucks that, like, the whole point of this arc is, yeah, Gunn used to suck, but he doesn't want to anymore. Whereas that's a character I've loved since his introduction. I never thought he sucked. I never thought it was a problem that he was good at things, like, that weren't reading books and being a lawyer. Like, that was never an issue for me. Obviously, like, doing a new spin on things for him to fit in here and having one of them, like, be a lawyer because they're working in a law firm, I'm not fighting. But the constant shitting on his past is just a bummer. Like, again, it feels like a season for people going, all right, we get it. None of you liked Gunn. Here's a new shiny one for you to like, finally.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Because now we don't have to do the one Gunn's black episode of the season. Because now Gunn's a lawyer.
Well, it's also like, I get I love the
exactly.
the contrast point. It's like, it's a cool idea. I'll stop there.
Well, I did say in this premiere that as much as this is frustrating, like, I feel like J. August Richards has never been more comfortable than playing this lawyer character, to the point he played lawyer characters like 500 times after Angel the series.
Yeah, he's great at it. I mean, he's great in general.
He's really good at it, yeah.
Absolutely. There's joy to watching him throw out the jargon authoritatively. Yeah. I'm not here to not say that because, like, he's fucking killing it. But it's just a bummer to see them shit all over, like, the concept of who this character actually is.
You're also admitting now that it has changed this character after all this time. It's like he's saying it's not. So how much of this is him actually feeling this way?
And so we get absolutely zero interiority on what Gunn is actually thinking and feeling about this whole thing, other than one moment where he's like, I can't lose
episode
for more about how he thinks and feels.
The episode after You're Welcome should have been like checking in on how all of our characters feel, moving us forward to like this next arc, and not fucking Why We Fight, where they're all bound and gagged.
Yeah. Oh, wild. Wild, wild, wild. But the scene, the final beat of the scene is Sparrow making a deal with him. He is a shipment, a little ancient curio he wants to sell, stuck in customs. If Gunn will cut through all the red tape, he will make him a lawyer again. Deal done. I'm sure that he'll have no horrible repercussions.
He's got to get his hit of the law, the original Fento.
Yeah.
The law.
He needs it.
So now that we've talked about this fun scene, you know what we have to talk about, guys.
What?
Fuck Watch.
Fuck Watch.
Say it, Joe. Say it.
The Fuck Watch? The Fuck Watch.
Yeah, I'll get out my... my Fuck Watch.
Watch. Joe, as the guest, you get to go first. Who you fucking?
Who am I fucking?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's I think it's the Q-Bert puppet. Like, I just, you know.
Hell yeah.
You get it.
Yeah.
Do I?
I feel like that's self-explanatory, and also what everyone should choose. So I'll be really embarrassed for you guys if you have different answers.
Morgan, what about you?
Okay. Well, prepare to be embarrassed for me. I, because she was nice, am going to fuck Nina.
Aww,
I like when people are sweeties.
I was like, she's nice, but also Cordelia Chase would have been negging the shit out of him now, and I miss that, actually, so...
I do. Like, she is still kind of giving glass of milk with googly eyes on it. But, like, she's sweet. LaToya, who are you fucking?
The Doy, Puppet Angel.
Yeah, I knew it.
Or let that puppet throw me around.
normal vampire or guts hanging out?
He's gonna start normal and those guts are gonna be shooting out by the end.
You ain't having those guts.
I feel like that means you did good.
Yeah, congrats. You really gave it to him.
Gave him the
that
business.
Is fuckwatch. Then in we are in like we're in the lab watching Smile Time. Wes and Fred are hanging out, watching the show. Wes is like, I like the show now. It's good, actually. Fred agrees. Very cute. This is where I'm like, if I only get one scene before they kiss to believe they want to kiss, them both being like, do you actually like the puppet show? Yeah, I like the puppet show. Is an all right piece of solidarity.
The romance arc is red light. I like red this light. Kid's show. Kiss.
Kiss.
I feel like there was more with Gun and Fred, right?
Yeah.
I get that math.
You had me at hello, red light, you know?
Yeah. There's a three-part arc, close. Guys. I really don't see an issue, so.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry. We're dumb and wrong, actually.
You're right.
That's why I'm here. That is why I'm here today.
We're just dumb girls. We should just put on some mini skirts like Fred and shut up.
And, yeah, and gossip to the chicks, man. And tell the men what they might need to think.
Yeah.
I'll be quietly typing just off screen if there you guys need me. So Knox shows up trying to third wheel this date. He brings coffee for Fred and for himself, not for Wes. And Wes is like, I'm good. I don't want to drink anything you bring me, you piece of shit. Like, it's very clear. Fred kicks Knox out gently. Like, she's like, we don't need you. You should, like, be awake tomorrow for the lab or whatever. Like, read the signals, sir. He will not.
They don't even need signals. She already said no, apparently, and he's just not taking it for an answer.
Not at all. He takes one last look at them sharing the one coffee together. Foiled. See. Then Wes asks, like, hey, Knox, like, you and him, how's it going? And she's like, oh, we went out a few times, but, like, we're done. He's nice enough, but I think he's been here too long.
Which plus, we've been saying since the beginning of the season. We're like, he's evil.
He's evil. And Wes is like, oh, you're looking for a funny guy. And I'm like, no, Wes. Wes shows up in like a clown wig the next day. He like Fred is trying to, you know, give her hints. So Wes is unfortunately not going to have a move made on him this evening because he sees a clue. When they mute the TV, it turns out the song that the puppets are singing masks what they are doing to, like, adults, I guess. And you, when you mute it, you can see that Polo is, like, leaning in and talking right to the kids and asking them to touch the screen and stuff. And look, we've got it. The smoking gun. Now our gang knows how evil is being done. Our next scene takes place in Angel's office. Angel is trying to sew himself up. Wes and Fred barge in. They figured it all out. You know, the puppets are about to be powerful enough to drain all the kids. They explain that the sphere that Angel saw has to be what's holding all of the kids' life forces. They have to break the magic binding on it, which will help the kids and make Angel normal again.
So someone was definitely tasked to sew Angel up, and he got upset, and he told him to go away. He's like, I'll do it myself. And then he realized his stupid puppet fingers couldn't do it, and so he got angry. Mm-hmm. Right.
It was 100% Harmony who's like, I can fix stuff, and was like trying to sew. Like, I would pay for the scene of Harmony, like, with her little pink thimble trying to sew him back together. It would be very cute.
I guarantee you that was a scene that either existed on the page or just in the hearts of the writers, because you are right. That is exactly what should have been there or was there.
See, when an actual showrunner is telling us what we're saying is right, that means you can never be mad at us for all of our criticisms, because we're right, again.
This is the truth. So Angel then, because of his puppet feelings, throws himself into Fred's arms and goes, I love you guys.
Chewy.
Love it. Gunn comes in. He is all lawed up, and he knows that Framkin's not doing this. It's the puppets. Ratings dipped last year, so Framkin made a deal with some devils to make it popular again.
And his
all the records are in the Demonic Library of Congress.
Friends don't ask, hey, weren't you having some issues? And you're fine now? What's up with that?
I mean, they didn't even notice he was having issues because these people don't like each other anymore, I guess.
It's also crazy. Because he's got to get his fix, basically, of the law drugs when he's talking to Dr. Creepy.
Give me that law.
Give me that law.
I want that law.
Yes, it is the limitless pill. It really is. He's like, oh, so the senior partners clearly don't want you to have it. But it's like, but I could give it to you if you do this thing for me. It's like, it's clearly he did the thing. He, much like Angela Bassett, he did the thing. He's the reason why you're losing it, not the senior partners.
Yeah. But, you know, what are you going to do? So they say, if we want to take out the show, we got to take out the puppets. So what does Angel do? He goes over to his weapons wall and he gets out his very big sword, which is like twice the size of him.
He's a buddy puppet.
And we get our classic end of credits, Angel walking through double doors shot with him in the full ensemble. And he's got the sword over his shoulders and it's very cute.
I love him.
We go to commercial. We come back. We are watching Smile Time with a little girl who I guess was in another episode of Buffy, like according to the wiki. Wild. She has a very cool beanbag chair. It's like bright blue with daisies on it. And so, I was like, where does one get a beanbag chair?
I was like, yeah, young Morgan wants this.
Absolutely. Look, I have a rich inner child and I want that beanbag chair.
She was in Hell's Bells. She played the fake child of Xander and Yana.
Oh.
When Xander's going through this fake vision of what the future is, and then even though he knows it's fake, he still is like, yeah, I'm going to leave you at the altar. And we're all like, this is bad writing, but okay, season six.
Oh, season six. We don't have time. So Polo, backwards baseball cap puppet, is like, come over here, little girl, and he starts slurping the life out of her. Her lips go blue immediately. It's not great to watch, but Angel's here and he cuts off Grufus's head right away. That's the dog one. Polo starts kicking Angel's ass over by the doghouse. Ratio Hornblower runs to protect the nest egg. Chaos has officially broken loose. Over in the don't room, Wes and Fred are there. Wes starts reading Latin from an old scroll, so you know it's about to go down.
And Fred wants to get his horny.
She loves when he does a spell. Like, that's like the number one thing that gets her into him.
I suppose.
Which is like, he's done a lot of spells in front of you, ma'am.
I suppose he wasn't doing that many spells, especially in season three. He was reading about prophecies. He wasn't doing spells. He was reading about prophecies, like falling asleep in his office, kidnapping babies. So he wasn't really doing spells.
I found a lot of that to be very hot.
Oh, it was hot. It was hot to us, but Fred likes the spells, so it wasn't hot to her.
Fair enough. Nothing is hotter to you and me than like a man who has nothing left. So we are different than Fred, I guess. Wes is doing his spell. The egg opens. He's like, Fred, don't look at that. Ratio Hornblower attacks Wes, and he's like, Fred, you gotta read. So Fred starts reading the scroll. Back on the Smile Time set, Flora, who's the girl one, attacks Gunn, and she's like, I want to rip your pretty little eyes out. Yikes.
So you admit his eyes are pretty.
Yeah, we get it. In the little girl's room, we see this shot of the child who's had a lot of the life sucked out of her, watching the show, and Gunn just throws this puppet right at camera, and it like slides down the glass of the lens, and this dazed girl is just like, oh, okay. Great. Back in the don't room, Fred is still reading that Latin. Ratio tries to kill Wes with a fire extinguisher, so then she just shoots him. I didn't know Fred had a gun.
Yeah, is that not a pre-established thing? I was so curious.
I mean, last time Fred was around guns, she got a grappling hook through her, right? Isn't that what happened?
Yes, she had a gun on that mission that she got the grappling hook through her body. So we have seen her with a gun like once before.
The mission where we thought
never felt right to me.
She got shot, but instead it was a grappling hook that went through her.
Okay, I guess she learned a lesson off screen.
Yeah, and that was one of the good episodes this season, and it was still inscrutable.
Yeah. So at the Smile Time set, Polo and Angel are fighting. Angel, is like, Polo's like, oh, you got a little demon in you. And he's like, more than a little. And he vamp faces as a puppet. Guys, thoughts on his vamp face?
Hell yes. Awesome.
I agree. The thoughts are hell yes.
See, my thoughts are more, every time you say Polo, I just think of the producer, Polo the Don, and the song London Bridge, before he goes, Polo! Fergie Ferg, what's happening?
Oh, shit. So Angel throws this Polo puppet through a two-dimensional treehouse. Over in the don't room, Wes pulls Ratio's horn out of his head, which seems to kill him. That seems right to me.
What a great night of television this was.
Yes.
Yeah, what a gift. The logic is sound. Over on the Smile Time set, Gunn has ripped Flora's arms off.
That's what I like to see.
And it's just like amidst the puppet carnage on the ground. The sphere blows up in the don't room. The little girl is like blown back into her beanbag chair and she's okay now. And then Nina wakes up in her cell amidst the puppet scraps. And her still not, like, not to knock this performance, but like her, oh my God, I ate him, does have just like a surprising lack of mustard on it. Like, it is still pretty, like, for realizing you've maybe eaten someone, there should maybe be a little bit more surprise. But she doesn't have to be scared for long, because Angel comes in still as a puppet and he's fine. He's gonna be a real boy again in like 2 to 3 days.
But are those will that become intestines in 2 or 3 days? That's what I want to know.
God, I
She's
hope.
She's just puking.
If I were Fred, I would keep all that stuff in a little pail and see if it turned into guts later.
She's gonna puke vampire intestines. Yeah. Those are dead.
I will write that spec.
Yeah, she ate those. Yeah, I'm in.
You got time?
Yeah.
Wait, hey, pencil's down. So
you're gonna snitch on Joe? It's a...
Well, guys,
I'm sorry,
I had a good run. I had a good run. Thank you. I retire.
Did it for the love of the game. He opens up Nina's cell and he asks her to breakfast, and they leave holding hands, even though he's a little puppet.
Then he goes outside and bursts into flames.
Yeah, in the little puppet fire. Then in Wes's office, Fred's like, hey, the kids are all okay. They're waking up. And he's like, you did such good work. I guess it's time for both of us to go to sleep. Like, Wes could not be more of a dweeb here. He's like, it's night-night time for me. I've got to put on my little cap and carry my candle with a plate on it. Like, we love it. Fred blocks the door. She's like, has to physically stop him from leaving so that she can kiss him.
She has to, like, sexually harass him at the workplace.
Yeah, not cool, Fred. haven't you been sensing anything lately about me coming for me? Didn't it occur to you that something might have changed? That I'm looking at you in a different... screw it. And she gives him a big old smooch. She then explains to him, that was a signal. Is it clear enough for you? And he's like, yeah, baby. And they kiss some more.
Would you say the iron is hot?
Yeah, I would say the iron's hot.
Cordelia comes back from heaven and slaps him.
Absolutely. They make out to Self-Esteem Is For Everybody. And I was like, hell yeah, how wholesome.
What a happy ending. And I'm sure everything will go well based on the history of the entire Buffyverse.
Mm-hmm. So we're here. They've kissed. Angel's going off to breakfast. Gunn has fresh law.
Yeah, his, the love of his life. Noggin. Law.
The law.
He's fulfilled now.
Something for everyone. And I don't know. That's our ep. Like, I had a great time. And once Angel and Nina are done with their breakfast, I wonder if there's a good episode of the WB for them to check out. LaToya, any thoughts?
I do have some thoughts. Hit the theme, baby.
WB.
They got that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma, and here's the episode that he needs to see.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think, I know you guys might be thinking, I'm going to suggest like an event episode of Buffy because this is an event episode of Angel. No, you dumb bitches.
We're so stupid.
I am.
You're so stupid. Instead, I'm going to like suggest a show that like had a whole season of event episodes, really, on the WB, kind of perfected the event episode. And that is Charmed season 5. You want an event episode? We're giving you mermaids. Baby. We're giving you sirens. We're giving you superheroes.
Yes.
We are giving you everything. We're giving you mummies.
Mm-hmm.
E2 mummy Tambien.
Yes.
That's an episode title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, did you know
Great.
That?
I can safely say I did not.
We're giving you
not
the Sandman.
We're
yeah.
raising awareness.
Mr. No. Sandman himself.
I'm learning.
Mm-hmm.
We are giving you
Incredible.
Leprechauns.
Mm-hmm.
We are giving you goddesses.
Yes.
And that is something I think we can all enjoy.
Absolutely.
Never had a problem watching season 5. We're never upset that they finally vanquished someone that we love dearly and have a Patreon exclusive podcast about.
Would never speak about that there exclusively if you're a patron of the Angel on Top podcast or the Empire Diaries podcast ever.
Yeah, it's just a good time. Events, like, some people think that Buffy invented the event series, and the answer is no. Charm did. Did Charm steal it? Yes, in terms of premises.
Yes.
But, like, in terms of events, no. Everyone else stole it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love to hear Angel's thoughts on all of season 5 of Charmed. I think he'd have a lot to say about Cole Turner, and I'd like to hear it.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's WB.
Yes. All right. Let's wrap this shit up, baby.
All right, gang. I have had the best time talking to you guys about this episode. This has been one of our cheerier season 5 episodes, which I think is very appropriate given the subject matter and given our guest. Joe, thank you so much for coming on with us. Do you have any closing thoughts on the ep before we wrap things up?
I mean, honestly, it was such a fun excuse to dive back into Angel and into an episode that I remember fondly. But, you know, sometimes you remember an episode fondly and you don't know if it'll age well. And I loved it. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I love Ben Edlund. I'd forgotten he directed it as well. I mean, he did a great job at it. And, like, I think LaToya, as you were saying, like, David Boreanaz is very funny. And this is one of the episodes where they explored that, allowed him to be funny, pushed him in those directions, and often, you know, he was just funny as a voice. But that's at times almost harder, or at least a different challenge. And I just thought it was a blast. So thank you guys for having me on. This was fun.
Thank you for being here.
LaToya, any big thoughts on this one before we shut the book?
Well, I mean, I just have to say, self-esteem is for everybody. Self-esteem is for everyone.
Yeah.
Where were you
so
in my
wise,
20s,
so
LaToya?
True. Where were you earlier today?
Where am I right now? I'm not going to look in the mirror as I sing the song.
Can I record
Absolutely
that and put it on repeat when I'm sad? That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Plugs,
that.
Baby. My plugs.
You can follow this podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Angel on Top Cast. You can go to angelontop.com to be sent to our Patreon, where you can get ad-free episodes, access to live watches that we do, and the aforementioned Cole Turner cast, which does rip. And our Discord, which is super fun. Mm-hmm. If you would like to follow me on social media, you can do so at Lorgan Mudich. Joe, where can the people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Henderson_Joe, and then I'm everywhere else. I'm on Spoutable, Hive, Mastodon, things that I don't even know the names of, usually just under Joe Henderson. Mm-hmm. I'll be on Blue Sky when I finally get an invite.
I just want to go
somewhere, whatever it's effing called. I just want to be somewhere Elon Musk is not. Until then, I am on Twitter. Please, mm-hmm. someone give me somewhere else to go.
Yes, as they would say on Smallville, somebody save me.
Some might say that.
So true.
But I just don't know the guy to say that to.
Fair. LaToya, where can the people find you, and should they?
I am going to use this to be a very selfish person. You can follow me on Twitter at LaFergs, and from there, you can contribute to my dog Chewy's GoFundMe, because Chewy, my beautiful, handsome gentleman, mm-hmm. just had a seizure, and we have to raise the money for the MRI, because those things are expensive, especially in California. So, mm-hmm. help him. He's a little gentleman, and he is my best friend. He's also technically Dahlia's best friend, but, like... Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to admit it to her.
More important.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and...
It's like... Mm-hmm.
Also, we're going to have another special guest for our next episode, A Hole in the World. Ooh. This would be Taylor... Yeah, sorry. You're not the only special guest we're having this season. Sorry.
I was told I was the only one.
Told you were an exclusive.
I lied to you. That's the thing.
Oh, you did?
Wait, who's the special guest? Yeah.
Take that back.
It is my good friend, as opposed to my okay friend.
Sure.
Taylor Brogan, who currently works on the AMC series Lucky Hank. She will be joining us. So we're going to get a woman's perspective on the show now, because too much testosterone in this one.
Fair enough.
Too many boy opinions.
Oh, thank you for saying I have that much testosterone. That's very sweet.
Oh,
you're so welcome. Well, until next time, you are now leaving Wolfram and Hart. And no, we do not validate.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.